The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
From Studio 7, I'm your host, Gary Puckett, and you're listening to the Flypod.com New Media Network. Our shows come to you exclusively through the digital program feeds of the Flypod.com. If you have an iPod, any standard MP3 player, or even a media-rich cell phone, you can download any of our shows for your personal listening. Or you can sign up for automatic show alert emails. It's all free. Visit our website to explore the wide variety of programs that await you, www.theflypod.com. With our nationwide team of show hosts, we podcast daily to thousands of small communities throughout the United States, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. When it comes to the media, we are what's next. My guest on today's show is a knowledgeable, well-informed individual on the subject of Freemasonry, the Masonic Lodge, or the Masons. We've all heard various terms. They all describe the same entity, the same organization. But the mysteries of this fraternity have been referenced in many books and movies, especially in recent years, and I thought it was high time we offer listeners the lowdown on what this organization is about. With me in the studio today, right now, is Dwayne Kemmerly. As I said, he's a very well-informed individual on the topic of the Masons, and I've asked him to come on my show to offer listeners information about the oldest existing fraternity in the world today. Dwayne, welcome to theflypod.com.
Good day.
It's great to have you on the show. I have to tell you, when I decided to do a show on this topic, I began searching for a guest, and your name kept appearing. So that says something about you. So you must be the go-to person, or at least one of them for sure, on this whole subject of the Masons. I'd like to begin by asking you, because in doing some homework before today's show, I did find references on the internet suggesting that Masonry is the oldest existing fraternity in the world today. Is that a true statement?
As far as we understand, it is. Freemasonry existed in various forms prior to 1717, but in 1717 in England, the lodge, as it were, went public, hung out a shingle, and began to meet, and was at that point known in the areas where they were meeting, and people knew people to be Masons themselves. Now, there were various portions of Masonry that existed before that time, but we really don't have the records to know what forms those earlier gatherings made.
Okay. Well, if you had to guess or make a conjecture based on your own knowledge, just how far back in time does the fraternity go?
We know that it has roots in the cathedral builders and the guilds that were a part of the organized workers that built the Gothic cathedrals in Europe.
In Europe. Mm-hmm.
And there is conjecture. There are some people who will make historical links to some of the more ancient groups, the ancient Knights Templar involved with the Crusades, and others will look at certain strands of history and say, here are some traditions that may have been a part of something. But that's people's supposition, and those are possibilities. We do know, though, that some of the traditions within the Masonic fraternity are connected with the cathedral builders, and there are some, at least, of the symbolism that comes from the Knights Templar and others.
So are you suggesting that at its very origin, that these were working artisans, if you will, that built these huge cathedrals, castles, great structures that many stand still today, correct?
Yes, and in fact, the simple notion that Freemasonry has to do with the Masonic craft of Masons, stonemasons, even comes down to some of the simple things that you'll see with Masons today. Occasionally, Masons will appear with their white aprons, and the white apron is a modern representation of the ancient stonemason's apron. Smaller, no doubt, not made large out of leather as the active craft would have used, but again has its connection to those old and ancient traditions.
So the Masons truly have their origin in the world at large. They're not an American organization.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. Masonry came over to the colonies with the colonists, many of whom military people, leaders, people who became the leaders of the revolution were Freemasons. So it's something that came as a part of our heritage.
Is it fair to assume then that some of our founding fathers were Masons?
Oh, without a doubt. Notably, George Washington himself was a Mason, sat as master of his lodge while he served as President of the United States. In his Masonic regalia, set the cornerstone of the Capitol building and other important places in those early years in Washington, D.C.
Well, in general, every day, authors and movie makers, you know, they often take a lot of creative liberties with their storylines. But in the numerous books and movies that reference the Masons in their storylines, and especially in recent years, the Masons have been depicted as a secret society. So let me ask you point blank, is Masonry a secret society? I mean, why would these media creators suggest that the Masonic fraternity is secret? Is it?
Well, very simply, it would be hard to consider something a secret society when they list their address and phone number in the phone book, they have signs out front, they advertise in a variety of things to let people know where they are. Members wear rings and buttons and badges, and the names of their various Masonic organizations on their coats is hardly a secret society.
Well, let me ask you that then. As you see an individual in public wearing a pin or a ring or a badge or something identifying them as a Mason, are they doing this to beat the bushes for membership, or why would they wear these outward signs of their affiliation?
It's much like anything else. They're simply proud to be a part of a fine community fraternity in the same way that someone who is a member of the Kiwanis Club or Rotary Club or a person that might wear something referencing their particular church or congregation identifies themselves as a part of the groups to which they belong.
So it's out of pride, I would say, in part, correct?
Yes.
Is that a good assumption?
In a positive sense.
Okay. Well, when it comes to the Masons, almost every reference I've ever seen in these movies, and here again, it could be a little, you know, the producer or the writers taking license and some liberties, but there seems to be a heavy content of symbolism. Why do you think this is the case? Are symbols, in fact, a big part of the Masonic fraternity?
Oh, without a doubt. As symbols have been an important part of our societies throughout the ages, in our modern age, with technology, we don't think about the important use of symbols as teaching tools. But even in the building of the great cathedrals, the art that is there was not intended just to be pleasant looking. But the purpose of the art, the religious art in the windows, the religious art in the carvings, in the stone, and in the wood, were teaching tools. They were symbols, they were artistic representations of stories, and those became the teaching tools that the educators, the priests, and the leaders would use in teaching the people. In our modern society, we've gotten away from that, we think, and yet we find that most of our learners are visual learners, and so we use any number of audio visuals in our educational programs. It's simply an older form of the same type of thing.
I see.
Okay. Freemasonry then has held on to its teaching symbols that come from a variety of sources over the ages.
What's the purpose of the Masonic fraternity? What are the goals of the Masons? What do they do?
Well, first and foremost, Freemasonry is a fraternity. It is a fraternity for adult men. Many of our fraternity structures that we have, whether it's on college campuses or in other forms, have grown out of the traditions that are similar to the type that we have in the Masonic Lodge.
So university fraternities really had their roots in, let's say, the Masonic fraternity model.
Yes, very much so. And in terms of the secrets, the secrets that a college fraternity have are the same as a local Masonic lodge would have. They're very simple. Secret signs, words, and modes of recognition. Those kinds of things that sometimes in the media they'll poke fun at when they do spoofs on local lodges and fraternal groups. But that's it. It's simply so that a person can be sure that someone else is actually a member because they know the grip They know the word. And that's really as far as the secrets go.
So the symbolism doesn't have a cynical side to it.
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
Though you'll hear some that will say, oh, but in the higher degrees, that's where the dark things are couched. And I've had the opportunity to have all of those higher degrees, and there's nothing dark, there's nothing sinister, there's nothing inappropriate there.
How high do the degrees go in Masonry?
In most parts of the world, there are two rites, as it's called, a York Rite and a Scottish Rite. The Basic Lodge is the unit of Freemasonry, and these are other degrees and fraternal organizations that go beyond then, offer other opportunities beyond the local lodge. On the York Rite side, there are three bodies. There's a chapter, a council, and a commandery. The furthest degree there is the Order of the Temple in the Knights Templar, the Fraternal Knights Templar. On the other side, on the Scottish Rite, they have numbered degrees, starting 4 through 32, with a 33rd degree that is an honorary degree.
From what I read on the internet, I kind of surmise that the degrees are like teaching vehicles. Is that a fair?
The word generally used is that they are an allegory, a teaching story or scene, either written around a moralistic purpose or an actual historical scene used because of the special teaching import that it brings.
But is the Masonic fraternity in reality a religion? Because it seems to have a lot of what I'll call spiritual references.
Not at all. Its symbolism comes, again, the idea of masons, stonemasons. The primary symbolism comes from the building of King Solomon's Temple in Jerusalem. So because of its religious overtones related to that, various scripture can be referred to, especially Old Testament scriptures. But the organization itself is no more a religion than would be the Boy Scouts, who have religious activities. They don't put forward a particular religion or dogma, but they suggest that their members be involved in whatever their religious tradition is. For example, in the Boy Scouts, you can work for the God and Country Award. And if you've ever seen their chart of all the different versions of that particular award, each one patterned to the specific religious background of the individual. In the same way in Freemasonry, members are encouraged to be involved in their own religious tradition, whatever that might be, but there is no definition of what they must believe or how they must believe.
There's not a conflict.
Not at all. The only requirement in Freemasonry is that the person believe in a higher being or in a higher power.
Well, in different religions, that may mean something different to each individual. Is that acceptable?
Very much so. It's considered a fraternity of men, a brotherhood of men, under the fatherhood of God, so to speak.
And whatever the concept of God means to an individual man.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. So really, what form of faith a Mason, a member of the Masons adopts is really irrelevant.
It's totally their own choice, their own heritage, their own belief structure.
You know what I see in there? I see that there would have to be an awful lot of tolerance or universal acceptance, or because you have all of these members of conceivably different faiths coming together. I mean, that in itself is fairly unusual, is it not?
Maybe especially in this day and age. We live in a modern time when we consider ourselves to be very sophisticated, and yet we can look across the world and even in our own communities and see various versions of the lack of toleration and religious strife. But a part of the traditions within the Masonic fraternity has been that sense that we are all brothers, as it were, in a fraternal setting, underneath the leadership, underneath the auspices of God, but however that belief in God is for ourselves. So the nature of a universal tolerance at that point is very much a part of the fabric of Freemasonry.
Understand. Well, okay, so we're talking about this universal brotherhood. So let me put it to you this way. Can any man, regardless of what his station in life is or regardless of his socioeconomic status, will the Masons take him in as a member? Is it discriminatory in any way based on how successful a person is?
Not at all. A person expresses an interest in the Masonic Lodge. Yes, they do take a look at the individual. They often will meet with the individual and do an interview of sorts. After that time, the lodge itself will cast a ballot to see whether or not they'll receive that person. But social status, business success, those things are not a part of the consideration. The Masonic fraternity is looking for good men, and then to assist them in becoming better men through the teachings, through the fellowship, and through the connections of Freemasonry.
Well, accepting that the Masonic fraternity has relatively ancient origins, actually, how has it changed to adapt to the new social ecology that really exists today?
Well, there was a time, even in the Western culture, in the earlier days of the United States, even before we were United States, that communities were very much a tight ecosystem where everything kind of related to one another. So in our early communities, we would find a church, we would find a school, we would find a Masonic lodge, and everybody who was anybody was a part of all of those. In our modern time, really those have separated out and stand on their own, and that has its good and its bad aspects in the long run. The Masonic fraternity then stands in a community as a special and unique opportunity for men to gather, to be mutually supportive, to spend time in an open brotherhood with one another, which is not something we often find. So in some ways, the usefulness of Freemasonry as a personal support and brotherhood setting that would have existed in the colonial days, for example, it might even have a greater value for us now because of the fragmented nature of our society.
Well, that raises an interesting question, and I'll just ask you outright. Is the Masonic organization in any way political?
Specifically not. By its choice, Freemasonry chooses not to take political stands and chooses not to have politics as a part of our discussions and what we do and how we use our influence.
Okay. In the course of doing my homework in preparation for today's show, I did find a lot of negative accusations and theories on the internet. Now we all know that, you know, you can't believe everything on the internet, but I did find a fair amount concerning the Masons that was very negative. And why do you think this information is out there in the cyber world? I mean, they referred to secret treasures and plots for some new world order. Where is all this coming from?
Part of it is historical in that there are always those persons and entities that are uncomfortable with an organization that builds an internal brotherhood that does not hold allegiance to whether it be the church or political powers or in some parts of the world dictators. And others then, just because not everything is known, they begin to fill in the blanks with all of their own interesting thoughts. So in part, people have done an interesting amount of wild thinking and conjecture, coming up with all sorts of things about this secret special organization. And then on the other hand, because Freemasonry has existed for some time around the world, there are pockets of Freemason in certain parts of the world. I think historically, specifically in Italy and in Brazil, when there were some times where some groups of Freemasons acted inappropriately, mostly on the political level. And that gave, especially in those areas, Freemasonry for a time a bad name. But that's not a part of the fabric of Freemasonry, nor the wider global tradition of Freemasonry.
When I was doing my poking around on the internet, I found, and you alluded to it a little bit earlier. In fact, you specifically mentioned it, and I want to zero in on this a little bit. I found numerous statements from a multitude of sources outwardly suggesting that, quote, the Masons take good men and make them better. Well, you know, this sounds pretty noble. So I want you to tell me, if this is the case, what are the principles and values at the very foundation of the Masonic fraternity that allows them to feel they can do this, to take a quote-unquote good man and make him better?
Well, it's the type of thing where if you believe you have good and positive principles that are a part of your organization, you utilize a system of teaching and sharing and organizing your group so that those principles are at the fore of who you are and what you become. The hope clearly is that you're passing on those principles to the people who become members or who are associated with your organization. Throughout the traditions and degrees of Freemasonry, there are many types of teachings and good moral standards that are shared. In the basic lodge itself, they talked often about brotherly love, about relief, assisting others, and the importance of truth. These are standards, the types of which that we don't often talk about in our communities these days, but Freemasonry is a place that holds on to those traditional values and that seeks to teach them and to share them not only with its membership, but all those that come in contact with the Masonic fraternity.
You know, as I sit here listening to you explain these things, I'm thinking to myself that these fundamentals, these values, these precepts are just universally good for humanity in general, I mean, in society, and today, more now than ever before, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that humanity at large would benefit greatly if we all maybe lived a little closer to these fundamental values. Am I missing something? Am I making too much of this? Or it just seems like the relevance of what this organization stands for has more value today than it ever has. I'm speaking from it from an American point of view at this point, but
of course, good sound thinking, good moral teaching, significant community values have always been important. But for those of us who live in this modern age and who see the news and who are aware of the kind of things that maybe make it more to the surface, even in the negative sense, I think many of us have the feeling that these important positive teachings are important for not only our communities, but for our country and would really help in some of the global issues as well.
Well, especially because a lot of the conflicts that we're seeing nowadays in various pockets of the world are based on religious differences. And what I heard you saying earlier is that a man's religion and his faith, his brand of faith, and what he perceives as this God or supreme being, if you will, is inconsequential to still sitting down, getting together on the level of brotherhood is what you, I think, called it. So
it's not so much inconsequential because our religious faith is a vital part of who we are. But what we choose is to begin our conversations, if that becomes necessary, on the common ground and not emphasize those points at which we differ. If we look at the various religious strife that exists around the world, very little of it has anything to do with religion. It ends up being various power and control and political issues that have grown out possibly of a religious heritage. But the actual fighting and wars and troubles that we have actually have very little to do with the religion itself.
It's kind of government at work.
On a variety of levels.
Well, let me ask you this, Dwayne. If a young man joined the Masons, what can he expect to gain from his affiliation in how would it impact his personal life and maybe the lives of those around him? I guess what I'm really asking is, what's the value of Freemasonry to young men today?
Some might say, you know, now come on, this Freemasonry is an old thing. We see they have old buildings in some of our towns and cities, and there's a bunch of old men. What possible value could this have to a young person? And so in preparation for this, I made contact with some of the younger Masons who I've had the opportunity to have connection with, some who are in their mid-20s and none older than 30 or 35. And I asked them, what are the main things that are of value to you in this, what some would see as an old and dusty organization of Freemasonry? And to a person, they were quick to respond that it is the brotherhood, it is the sense of fraternity, of gathering together with other good men, of feeling supported by them, of being in an intergenerational setting where there are men of three and four and five living generations gathering together, all for a common purpose, all being caring and supportive of one another and interested in positive, important things in their communities.
Wow. You know, you don't see a whole lot of that today.
No, we don't.
Not enough of it.
Not nearly
enough.
I would
go as far as to say, yeah. If a man wanted to join the Masons, how does he do this? Does he just go up and knock on the door of one of these old buildings you're talking about? I mean, who does he ask? Who does he go to? How does it happen?
Well, you could, if you know where your Masonic Lodge is, you could do that, though. Of course, they're only open when they're having meetings or other happenings going on. Or in some of the larger cities, the buildings will be open, and anyone that's there would be glad to talk with an individual and help make a connection. Or if you know a Mason, if you know a person that's a member of the Masonic fraternity, you simply ask them. They'll be glad to make the connection.
They'll help make it happen.
But you can also go online. You can find in various states, in various locations. You check the Grand Lodge of whatever state. Many of them will have a website. Many of those websites will have a reference guide that will refer you to a place or to a person. That might even be able to make a connection with the local lodge in your community and have a contact name or number. You know, a lot of publicity for what some people would call a secret organization.
Yeah, really. Well, I think the whole secret issue is kind of out the window, but that does make for great movies.
Oh, yes, it does. Yes, it does. And because of the great, rich tradition of symbolism and all the historical things that are made reference to in Freemasonry, I can see where it's a great fertile ground for producers and movie writers to take bits and pieces and run with it. And to be perfectly honest, in the more recent years, the Masonic fraternity has decided, well, you know, if they're that interested in us, that's okay. It gets our name out there, and it elicits the opportunity to have discussion when people say, well, I saw a movie that had this Masonic reference in it, and you're a Mason. Tell me about that. So actually, it's been a good thing, even some of the stranger things they've presented in some of the movies, because it has given opportunity to have the discussion to share with someone else about what Freemasonry really is.
That's great. That's great. Dwayne, I'd like to thank you for coming on my show today. Your explanations have been very informative, and I'm convinced now that there was a reason why your name kept popping up when I was looking for a source. And I want to tell listeners that he did all this right out of his head. There's absolutely no paper in front of him, so I'm sure the listeners have learned some things today they didn't know, but that's what these shows are about. And I want to thank you again for coming in the studio and doing the show today.
Well, it's been my pleasure to share a bit of my experience with Freemasonry.
Wonderful. And you're welcome back anytime.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, that is my show for today. From Studio 7, I'm your host, Gary Puckett, and my guest has been Dwayne Kemmerly. Remember, you can stream our shows and listen online, but our programs are available to you free and clear for downloading onto your iPod or MP3 player. If you are listening to our show through one of our syndication partners, well, welcome aboard. And when you have a few minutes, visit our website, www.theflypod.com. Share this show with your friends. It's interesting stuff. Until next time, thank you very much for listening.